Starting here on the top of Yud Gimel and Aleph, the Gemara says, "I'm Reb Nachman, I'm a Rav. Halacha ki Reb Yehuda. Halacha is like Reb Yehuda. We had our machloket in the Mishnah between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, and over here Rav is saying that halacha is like Reb Yehuda, which is our practice as well, which is that you can eat chametz until the end of the fourth hour. During the fifth hour, you cannot eat chametz, but you can get hana from chametz, and then into the sixth hour, it's asur midrabanan, and then the seventh hour, it's asur midoraita." Amalei Rovo the Rav Nachman v'neimah mar halacha ki Rabbi Meir. Why are you paskin in halacha like Rabbi Yehuda? You should be paskin in halacha like Rabbi Meir. The stam lan kavan tana kavotei. Because we have a stam mishnah that is alibu de Rabbi Meir de Tanan. We have a mishnah kosha a shemutar lechol machil. As long as you can eat, you can feed. So feeding would be, for example, feeding to your animals, which would be an issue of hana'a. And mutar lechol is a period when you can eat. So as long as you can eat, you can feed your animals, which means that there's a correlation between the achila and hana'a. There's no separation between the periods of time, achila and hana'a. That's true for Rabbi Meir. That's not true for Rabbi Yehuda. So he says back to Rav Nachman, how you love stamo? That's not right. That mishnah is not a libo de Rabbi Meir. Mishum dokashio mutar. That extra word of mutar is unnecessary or extraneous for Rabbi Meir. Because if you wanted to phrase it according to Rabbi Meir, you should have said kosha'a. She'ochel ma'achil. Because that would have been the simplest way to phrase it. As long as you can eat, you can feed. What is this word, shim mutar? So the Gemara, we'll get to this further on in the Masechta. The Gemara supposes that mutar here means that there are actually two people involved. And that means that kosha'a shim mutar lechol for someone else, then it's mutar for you, la'achil, your behemot. So as long as someone else can eat, then you can feed your behemot. What is that case where someone else can eat and you can't eat? So that's Aliba de Rabban Gamliel. Because Rabbi Gamliel is the one who says that during that in-between hour, the Kohanim can eat Truma, but you cannot consume Chulin. So in that case, Kol Shem Mutar Lechol, where someone else can eat, meaning the Kohen can eat, then it's Mutar for you to feed your behemot. It's Mutar Behana'a for you. And so actually the Stam Mishnah is not Aliba de Rabbi Meir, but rather the Stam Mishnah is Alibo de Rabban Gamliel. Now, truthfully, the Gemara could have continued now and said, well, then you have a Stam Mishnah Alibo de Rabban Gamliel, why don't you paskin like Rabban Gamliel? You may ask another question, which is, Neimar Amar Locha ke Rabban Gamliel. Let us say the Locha is like Rabban Gamliel, the Havalei Machriya. Because over here, he is the third opinion. So the idea of a Machriya is that if you have two people arguing, and then a third party comes in, and is somehow a compromise or a middle position, that we generally pass on the halacha like the machriya. So here the Gemara says we have the position of Rabbi Meir, the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and then we have the position of Rabban Gamliel, which is somewhat of a middle position between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir says everything is mutar to eat throughout the fifth hour. Rabbi Yehuda says everything's asur through the fifth hour. And you have Rabban Gamliel coming and say, okay, by chulin it's asur. By Truma, it's Mutar. So he is somewhat of a middle position here with regards to our Mishnah. If that's the case, the halacha should be like him because he's the Machriya. Amalei, Rabban Gamliel, lav Machriyahu. Says Rabban Gamliel is not a Machriya. This Gemara will repeat on Daf Chaf Aleph, and over there, both Rashi and the Tosafot explain what it means that he's a lav Machriyahu. But lav Machriya here is because if you look in the Mishnah, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda make no mention of Truma versus Chulin. I explained it that way. It's obvious that when Rabbi Meir says it's mutar to eat, it's mutar to eat both Chulin and Truma. And Rabbi Yehuda says it's asur to eat, he means both Chulin and Truma. Nevertheless, since in the Mishnah they make no explicit mention of Ben Truma, Ben Chulin, then when Rabbi Gamliel introduces Truma into the Mishnah, he's no longer a machriya, but rather Tama Denafshei Kamar, an independent statement. Machriya only applies when you have two of the parties mentioning some item or some differential or no differential between them. Then the third party comes on and takes on a portion of what they said. So had Rabbi Meir mentioned Ben Truma Ben Chulin and Rabbi Yehuda mentioned Ben Truma Ben Chulin, then Rabban Gamliel would have been a Machriya. But the fact that they never mentioned Truma at all, even though it's implicit in their statement, therefore Rabban Gamliel does not become a Machriya anymore, and he is an independent opinion or a third opinion in the Mishnah, and we don't necessarily have to paskin like him. Tosafot in other places points out why the halacha is like the machriya. It's not simply because he is the compromised position, but rather he's now created a situation in which each one of the positions that he takes, he makes it to a 2-to-1 decision. So For instance, in this case over here, if we were to say that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir mentioned Shuma and Chulin, then along comes Rabbi Gamliel and says, well, with regards to Chulin, you're right, there's an Isser already starting in the fifth hour. That means that both he and Rabbi Yehuda say that the Isser Chametz begins in the fifth hour, against Rabbi Meir says it doesn't. On the other hand, by Shuma, he'll say, Shuma, oh, that's Mutar, even through the fifth hour until the sixth hour. That means that for Shuma, you have Rabbi Meir and him both saying that it's okay up to the sixth hour, and you only have Rabbi Yehuda saying that's a sur from the fifth hour. So again, it's two against one. And that's why the loch will be the Divrei HaMachria, because in a real sense, he's the Machria. He's making it into the majority vote for the two positions that he takes, or the compromise position that he takes. V'ibayitema. Some say that this statement of Rav was the Rav, the Marki Haitana. The Rav actually paskin like this Tano, the Tanya. Arbas Arshachaliot B'Shabbat. If the Erev Pesach fell out on Shabbat itself, you eliminate all the chametz prior to Shabbat. B'sorfin trumot tmeot tluyot v'tahorot. And you burn all of the truma prior to Shabbat. That means truma tmea, which is supposed to be burnt anyway. Truma tluya, which is truma that we have a safek as to whether it's tamei or tahor. U'tahorot, and completely tahor truma. Umishayarin min hateorot mazun shteisu udot. And from the truma tehorah, the Kohen leaves for himself and his family the amount of two su'udot. Kedei le'achol ad dalet sha'ot. So that he can eat until the fourth hour. Divrei Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda ish bartuta shamar mishum Rabbi Yoshua. So the suggestion of the Gemara here is that Rav Paskin's halacha like this, Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda. Now there's a very interesting statement over here. The Gemara says that you keep two su'udot for Shabbat. Why are you only keeping two su'udot for Shabbat? Generally on Shabbat, you eat three su'udot. We know that from the Gemara in Shabbat, when it comes to a fire in a house on Shabbat, we allow you to save shalosh su'udot, because that's the number of su'udot that you plan on eating over Shabbat. Here, prior to Shabbat, you're burning all the chametz. Why aren't you keeping for yourself three su'udot? So Rashi answers the question. And he says, mazon shtei su'udot velo shalosh. Techo shalosh su'udot to Shabbat. Let me tell you how the su'udot of Shabbat lay out. Arvit, shachrit, umincha. That's when you have the three meals on Shabbat. But unfortunately, when Erev Pesach is on Shabbat, then sur d'achol min amincha olamalo. You can't eat. From mincha and onward, you can't eat. Because you have to preserve your appetite for the meal that night for the Seder. And so because of that, you can't eat min amincha olamalo. So that precludes you from having your third su'uda on the day of Shabbat that is Erev Pesach. And that's why Rashi says they only mention two su'udot and not shalosh su'udot. This problem, it came up a couple of years ago, about 6 years ago. It came up when Erev Pesach was on Shabbat. And when Erev Pesach is on Shabbat, you're left with this problem. This problem, what do you do with su'udah shlishit? There's a tension. What are the tensions here? One tension is that with regards to chametz you can only eat until the fourth hour of the day, the completion of the fourth hour of the day. The second tension is you cannot eat matzah on Erev Pesach. The Yerushalmi says anyone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach is kibo'el arusato bebeit chamiv. So that's considered to be completely inappropriate to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. So even though people have minhagim to do it for a longer period of time, in general, it's accepted almost everywhere that nobody eats matzah on Erev Pesach, kedei she'echol matzah b'teyavon, so that you have matzah b'teyavon that night. So matzah, you can't eat on Erev Pesach. So the solution that you would come up with, and this is what the Tosafot suggests in other places, the Meiri brings it here on our daf, is that the Rabbanei Tzafrat said, okay, no problem. You need shalosh se'udot on Shabbat, and you have time limitations, you have this problem. So you have one su'udah at night. In the morning, you'll have two su'udot. You get up early in the morning, you'll daven, you'll have a su'udah. Then you'll finish that su'udah, you'll bench. And right after you bench, you'll start another su'udah. And you have three su'udot through the day before you hit the end of the fourth hour. So by doing that, you get your shalosh su'udot in with chametz. So therefore, you have lechem mishnah. You're able to do it properly during the day. There are two problems with that practice. One of the problems with that practice is what we call bracha she'ena tzricha. You're making a bracha that's unnecessary. You're benching in the middle of your meal, and then you wash again and eat right afterwards, back-to-back meals. So you are creating brachot she'inan tzrichot, unnecessary brachot, because you're forcing a benching, and then you're forcing yourself to make hamotzi again. That's one problem. The second problem is this idea that Rashi raises over here. He raises it in the context of Erev Pesach, which is inappropriate to eat a big meal late in the day on Pesach. But from that, it implies in Rashi that the proper time to eat Suda Shlishit is Min HaMincha Onamalo. And the Rambam writes it explicitly, other Rishonim mentioned this, that the proper time to eat Suda Shlishit, or the only time to be Yotze Suda Shlishit, is Min HaMincha Onamalo. It's from Mincha time and onward. So this suggestion of the Balei HaTosfot to have the two meals in the morning doesn't solve that problem, because Suda Shlishit will be in the morning and not in the afternoon. That's what the Magen Avraham brings down, and generally the halacha we try to practice that way, which is to eat Suda Shlishit in the afternoon, Bizman HaMincha. But Bizman HaMincha, now I'm in trouble. I can't have chametz then. I can't eat matzah then. So what am I supposed to do in that case? The Meiri does bring a suggestion from some of the Rishonim, which is that this Isur of Matzah on Erev Pesach only applies Bizman Isur Chametz. Only applies from noon and onward. When you can't eat chametz, that's when you also can't eat matzah. And therefore, in the morning time, you could eat matzah. And therefore, he suggests that maybe you could make, early in the day, you could make hamotzi on lechem, on bread. And then you could take some time, take a big break. And then make hamotzi on matzah. So you get rid of that problem of brocha she'ina tzricha. The problem of matzah and Erev Pesach only starts from noon and onward. The one problem that you're left with is this problem of Suda Shlishit is supposed to be Bizman HaMincha, at the time of Mincha. The suggestion that we use in general is we do something akin to what the Balei HaTosafot explained, which is that we have two meals in the morning. We get up very early in the morning. We have one meal. We take a break. Then we have a second meal, which we watch for, and that's our Suda Shlishit. And then, in order to be Mekayim, the aspect of having Suda Shlishit Bizman HaMincha, we rely on those shitot that believe that you don't need lechem mishneh for Suda Shlishit. And we eat in the afternoon, we eat minei perot, or minei targima, things that you can eat on Erev Pesach without it being a problem in terms of rooting your appetite or a problem of consuming matzah or chametz. And therefore we make our Suda Shlishit out of those items, even though we're not washing. That's the general suggestion that is made to solve this problem of making the meals on Erev Pesach. Now, but one of the ways that you could solve the problem, which a lot of the poskim push against, is that you could make hamotzi for the second meal on chametz, eat that chametz up, finish it up, and then continue the meal through past the time as Zman Isur chametz. But a lot of the poskim don't like that because they don't like the fact that you have chametz in that meal, in a meal that's going to continue past the Zman Isur chametz, because there could be problems that come from that, which is people forget, or they continue eating the chametz past the Zman Isur chametz, so they're not so in favor of that approach. But Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon has a suggestion in his book about Erev Pesach Shechaliot B'Shabbat. He has a different or unusual way to deal with this problem. Rav Rimon suggests that you get up early in the morning like we do our practice. You make hamotzi and then you eat a meal and then you stop again. Then you wait till a later time and then you have a full-fledged meal. Without lechem mishneh, that is Bizman HaMincha, mean later in the day. It's a meal, but it doesn't include any lechem mishneh, but it's a full-fledged meal at that period of time, so that you have before Mincha Ketana Olamalo, before the latter half of the day when it's a sort to have a meal coming into Erev Pesach, but after Zman Mincha Gedola, but you have a full-fledged meal, which will be your Suda Shlishit on Erev HaPesach. All right, so that's just that one issue. The only thing you have to deal with is, even according to those, Rashi here says there's just two sudot. That's why the Gemara says two sudot. According to the Balei HaTosfot and others who say that it's three sudot, then why does our Gemara over here say two sudot? So many of them suggest, and the Meiri brings this down, is that the Suda Shlishit and the morning will actually be a combination of half a meal and half a meal. Because you take one of those sudot and you divide it in half to make it the Suda Shniyah and the Suda Shlishit, so that you actually don't have three full meals. You have a meal, half a meal, and then half a meal. And that's how you get the Suda Shlishit, because you're eating in such close proximity, those two meals, that it wouldn't make sense to have a full two Sudot in that such a short duration. All right, so now the Gemara says, Amru lo, Tehorot lo yisrifu. So they said to Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda ish bar Tota, why are you burning the Tahor Truma? The Tahor Truma can be consumed from then all the way through to the Zman Yisr Chametz. Why would you burn it on Erev Shabbat? Maybe you could find somebody to eat it in the interim. Samar lahem, Rabbi Lozar ben Yehuda Ish Bartuta says back to them, Kfar Bikshu v'lo Matzu. They know who's in the city. Here's a Kohen. He knows what he needs for his family. He knows whoever else lives in the city. If they couldn't find those people on Erev Shabbat to give them the food, there's nobody else going to show up on Shabbat that's going to need that food. What, where all of a sudden you're going to have these magical guests show up, they're going to want to eat that chametz? We know, we have a good perspective on who's here and who can eat it. And there's nobody else, so we know it already. So there's no reason to keep it around. Maybe they reached inside the tchum of the ear before Shabbat, but they didn't come into the city itself, and they put up camp right outside the city, and they're going to show up on Shabbat, and now you're going to have guests to feed on Shabbat. There is that possibility. So Amalahem, he said, if you're going to start worrying about things like that, even the things that are safek tuma, you shouldn't burn. Shema yavo Eliyahu v'tarim. Because then maybe Eliyahu will come, and if Eliyahu comes and makes them tahor, why are we accelerating burning them when we could have waited a little longer? And if Eliyahu shows up, he'll give us the information that we need. So Amalo, kvar muftach lahem l'Yisrael she'en Eliyahu ba lo ba'arvei Shabbatot v'lo ba'arvei yamim tovim. But Israel already have a haftacha that Eliyahu Navi, to be master al biyat Mashiach, would not come on Erev Shabbat and would not come on Erev Yom Tov mipnei haTorah because of the difficulty that it would cause. Number one, so Rashi explains it here. You're dealing with an Erev Shabbat followed by an Erev Yom Tov. So you have 2 days in a row where we know that Eliyahu Navi is not going to show up. You have Erev Shabbat, then Erev Yom Tov, he's not going to show up. So what's the point of keeping around the tluyot from Erev Shabbat onto Erev Yom Tov when there's not a chance that Eliyahu was going to show up anyway because that's already part of the avdoch that he won't show up on those days? So that's the way Rashi interprets it over here. Tosafot in the Gemara in Erevin explains that it's a kol shekein. If he's not going to show up on Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov, then he certainly won't show up on Shabbat. Because what's the reason that he doesn't show up on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov? Rashi explains that. Sheish lehem lasok b'sudat Shabbat. Because the people are supposed to be engaged in preparing for the Shabbat and involved in the mitzvah of preparing the sudot Shabbat and getting ready for Shabbat. And instead, v'yitar dubo. They'll be distracted by Eliyahu. They'll be distracted by the news. Good reason to get distracted. But they'll get distracted and then they won't make Shabbat properly or they won't make Yom Tov properly. So in order to avoid that problem, we say, all right, we have a Mesora that Eliyahu Navi won't show up in Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov. You can focus on preparing for Shabbat, preparing for Yom Tov. You're not going to be distracted by the appearance of Eliyahu Navi. So based on that, Tosafot says it's a koshkein to Shabbat itself. On Shabbat itself, a person's asuk in the mitzvah of Shabbat and the sudata Shabbat. If Eliyahu Navi shows up on Shabbat itself, then of course that's going to be the same problem. He's going to distract people, take them away from the mitzvah Yom. So because of that, he won't show up on Shabbat. Just like he won't show up on Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov, he won't show up on Shabbat. Just two different ways to formulate what the issue is over here. We will get to this sugya once again. We saw it in Erevin. We're seeing it here. We will see it once again in Beitza and in Rosh Hashanah. Over there, the Gemara will have more extensive deliberations about this, and we can discuss it more then, because that it also involves what how the Mikdash is going to be built, or who is going to build the Beit HaMikdash. And that's subject to a machloket, both in the Gemara, as well as amongst the Rishonim, as to how the Beit HaMikdash is going to be built, and that has impact on this whole purview or this whole perspective. It happens to be Minyan Adiyoma, since we are in the 3 weeks leading into the 9 days, about the fact that how the Mikdash will be built. We do say in Nachem, when we say Nachem, we seem to paskin like one of the two shitot, which is, we say in the Nachem of the Tefillah that we add in on Tisha B'Av, that Be'esh, it was destroyed by fire, and that it will be built with fire. So that seems to indicate that the authors of the Nachem believed or followed those positions of the Gemara as well as the Rishonim that believed that the Beit HaMikdash L'Atid Lavoh will be born in fire, that will be built by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not built by human beings. But it's something to focus on or keep in mind when we say the Nachem, that there are other opinions. There are significant opinions both in the Gemara and amongst the Rishonim, that the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt by human beings. And that has other implications here in terms of Eliyahu Navi showing up and Mashiach showing up because of Binyan Beit HaMikdash. So Amru, Lo Zazu Misham, Ad Shekavu Alacha, Rebbe Elazar Ben Yehuda Ish Partuta. They didn't leave from there until they were koveya halacha like Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Dush, Rabbi Dush, Amar Bishum Rabbi Shua. So that's why Rav also paskin like him, because the halacha was like him. So my love, afilu lechol, sounds like when they were koveya halacha like him, they were koveya halacha the gamer like him. Now one of the things he said over here is that you're only allowed to eat ad dalet shaot, until the end of the fourth hour. So based on that, that would support the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda also says that you can only eat until Dalid Sha'ot, until the fourth hour. Now it wasn't to be Koveh Alocha to eat it, meaning that the Zman that he says that you're allowed to eat on Erev Pesach, but rather about the issue of whether you should burn everything before Shabbat, or you should leave more stuff over and then deal with it on Shabbat itself. Bimavatalit, or Bimavazah the Ruach, or Peru, what should you do? So that's when they were Koveh, the Koveh Alocha like him, that we burn everything before Shabbat. We get rid of everything before Shabbat, except we leave over the Ishtay Si'udot. And that's what it means. Halacha is Kaya Rabbi Elazar bin Yehuda Ish Bartuta. But that doesn't mean necessarily we have evidence from that Tviat Halacha about when the Zman of Achilat Chameitz ends on Erev Pesach. Because that statement about Rabbi Elazar bin Rabbi Yehuda Ish Bartuta is not necessarily the Halacha with regards to the hour in which you're allowed to eat Chameitz until on Erev Pesach. Vav Rabbi Savalal Hadar of Nachman. Rabbi also seems to agree with this position of Nachman, which is Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Alocha Rabbi Yehuda. Damar Avin Bar Rav Ada, Maaseh Bedam Echad. It was an incident with this one individual, Shivkid Diskia Mleya Chametz. Gave over a pouch, courier bag, that was full of Chametz. Rash says that the word is actually a conjugation of two words, which is Du Sakya, a double sack. And that is the sack, or the amtachat, is the word that he translates in Hebrew that we have in the Torah by the Shvatim. When they come down to Yosef, they go back with amtachot. Those amtachot are saddlebags that sit over the back of the donkey and they hang on each side. There's a bag to the right and a bag to the left, and that's how they stay on because they're on each side. And that's why it's called a diskia, du sack. It's a double bag because it's a bag on each side. Itzo Yochanan Chakuka. And they left it by this individual, Yochanan Chokoka, which we bumped into earlier in the Masechta. Tosafot mentioned that. Over there, Chokoka was from the place, the location called Chokoka, as well as the other possibilities. Chokoka is from the word Chokek, which is a terminology that's used in the Torah to indicate a person of leadership, a person of stature. So it's one of those two explanations of Chokoka over here. V'nakvua achbarim, and the mice got to the Chametz. V'ya Chametz. And the chametz was starting to flow out, burst out of this bag. And he came to Rabbi to ask him what he should do. Said for the first hour, he said to him, wait, maybe the guy will show up and he'll want his chametz and he'll eat it. Second hour, he says to him, wait, maybe he'll show up and he'll want to eat it. Third hour, also he says, wait. The fourth hour, he told him also to wait. The problem being that if he doesn't wait and he goes out and sells the chametz on Erev Pesach is one of those items that doesn't fetch a big price. So if he sells it, he's not going to get a lot of money for it. So as we say, the expression is, it's worth more alive than it is dead. Which is that if he can eat it, it's worth more to him if he can eat it than if he actually sells it and he tries to monetize the chametz over here, because you're talking about chametz on Erev Pesach. So that's why Rabbi's saying to him, wait, 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 maybe he'll show up and he'll want to eat it, because it's definitely worth more for him to eat it than it is for it to sell it. Chamishit, once you hit the fifth hour, go and sell it in the marketplace. My love, who's he selling it to in the fifth hour? Lenochrim, must be selling it to non-Jews in the fifth hour. That sounds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, because you are asur ba'achila at this point, but yet you are still mutar behana'a. So that would be the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and it seems like Rabbi is supporting that position of Rabbi Yehuda. So that's what he says. Malachim Rabbi Yehuda. So I'm Rabbi Yosef. No, lo to Israel. He sold it to Jews. Ki Rabbi Meir. Like the Shita of Rabbi Meir. He was in the fifth hour. Yes, it's not Osir Ba'achila yet. And it's not Osir Ba'ana'a. But if he doesn't sell it now, he can't sell it in the sixth hour. The sixth hour will be worthless. So at least he sells it in the fifth hour. At least it has some value left in it. So he's selling it to Jews in order to monetize whatever he can get out of it in the end. But that would be a Libid Shita to Rabbi Meir. Amalei Abaye. Israel, if he's selling to a Jew, Nishkalei Nafshei, let him sell it to himself. Let him buy it himself, and he can eat it himself. Marzez Mishum Chashto, we don't allow self-dealing in these cases because of the fear, if you don't have an arm's-length transaction, that people are going to cheat in these situations, or even if they don't cheat, people will think that they cheated or think that they did something to their own benefit or for their own benefit. Titania, we have examples of this, that Gabayt Stakash Enle Manim Nechalik. The Gabbai Tzedakah has coins to give out to the Aniyim, but there aren't sufficient poor people around for him to give out all the funds that he has. So Portim L'Acherim, he takes the coins. The coins that he's talking about are the copper coins, are the smaller Prutot coins that he would give out to the Aniyim, but to hang on to them is not a good idea because they rust and they decay. Those coins that lose value in that manner, it's actually be a cost to the Tzedakah if we continue to hold the coins in their copper form. Remember, in their day, the underlying value of the coin was determined by the metal and the weight of the coin. So if a coin deteriorates, it's going to lose value, even though it's the same pruta, it's the same coin that's stamped in the same way. But the people looked at it and said, well, if it doesn't weigh the full amount, it wasn't the full amount of the metal, then it didn't have the full value. So over here, what is he going to do? He's going to consolidate all the smaller coins onto a larger silver coin in order to preserve the tzedakah. So who does he have to go to do that? He has to portin l'acherim, he has to go to others, he has to go to third parties to give them these coins and exchange it for the silver coin. Vein portin l'atzman, and he cannot consolidate it with his own money. He can't take his own kesef, pay for it, and consolidate it. Gabai tamchui. Gabai of the tamchui is the plate that's given out. It's the food plate that is given out, meaning that the gabai tzedakah is giving out money for people who have longer term issues, but in the short term or in the immediate term are okay. Gabai tamchui is literally for people who have no food from the next meal. It's a food plate that they go around with. So now, Shein Lehem Aniyim L'Chalik, he brings around all the food, and all the Aniyim have taken, and now he has excess food. Mochrin L'Acherim, he can sell that to third parties. Vein Mochrin L'Atzman, but he cannot sell it to himself. Mishum Shneamar, because this pasuk that is a fundamental core pasuk that everybody needs to know, which is from this week's parsha, V'item Nikim Me'Hashem U'Mi Yisrael. There's a necessity, it's an obligation to be Nikiim, clean in the eyes of Hashem, which means you do the right thing. Umi Yisrael, that means that even if you do the right thing, other people should also know that you're doing the right thing. That if you're doing the right thing and other people are not going to understand that and they're going to think you're doing the wrong thing, then that's a problem. Nikiim Hashem Yisrael means that your activities and your actions should be seen both by Hashem as being right and by the people as being right. So even when you're in the right, and even when you're doing right, there's still an obligation to ensure that others understand that what you're doing is correct and what you're doing is right. Amalei Rav Ada Bar Matno. So we saw this through Eiruvin with Abaye. Abaye, who's a Talmid of Rav Yosef, we saw this recurring throughout Eiruvin, which is Abaye would say something, and then Rav Yosef said, no, that can't be. How could it be? You can't explain it that way. And then Abaye said to him, you told us that. You, Rav Yosef, you're the one who told us that that was the case. And we know in all those instances, Rav Yosef fell ill in the middle of his life. So he taught things to his Talmidim originally, and then he forgot everything through his illness, and then he relearned later on. So there are many times where, for instance, over here, he says, no, they didn't sell it to an Achri, they sold it to Yisrael. And one of his Talmidim, Rav Adar Bar Matna, says to him, Rav Yosef, prepare Shemartlan, you definitely said this to us. Sayu machran l'nachrim k'Rav Yehuda. That what was meant over here to go out and sell it, according to Rabbi, meant go out and sell it to the non-Jews. And Rabbi was paskening like Rabbi Yehuda. So here we have Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Halacha Ki Rabbi Yehuda, the paskening halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. We have the other possibility, which is this idea that Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda Ish Bar Tuta, that the halacha is like him, which would have supported also that position of Rabbi Yehuda. But in the end, the Gemara says, or bifurcates that position, and says, we hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Yehuda with regards to burning the Truma Erev Shabbat, but we don't necessarily hold like him with regards to the hours until which you can eat those items. And now we have the last instance over here where we have support for this position of Rabbi Yehuda through Rabbi, this case law where Rabbi said to wait until the fifth hour, and in the fifth hour he let him sell it to non-Jews, which would indicate that there was an Isser Achila because he didn't want him to wait anymore for the owners to come back and eat it, but there was still a Mutar Bana, and that's why he can sell it to the non-Jews. All right, so now, Amar Rav Yosef, Kaman Azlash Maito de Rabbi. According to whom does this position of Rabbi follow? Meaning that Rabbi who acted here to wait until the fifth hour in order to sell it, like whom was he following in another machloket, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Ditnan. We have a Mishnah in Papa Metzia. Mafkid Perot Itzel Chavero, a person who leaves in trust or for safekeeping his fruits with his friend. Afelu Hein Avudim, even if they're going to rot, they're going to waste. Lo Yigabehen. Don't touch them, meaning that he gave them for you to keep. He wants to keep them. If he has an interest in getting them back, he'll come and get them back. If they're rotting, you just keep them for him. That's what he has to do. You keep them for him. You don't get involved. You don't interact with these fruits. You sell them in Beit Din. There's no greater Hashavat Aveda that you can do for someone. We have a mitzvah in the Torah to do Hashavat Aveda. This is a classic case of a Shavat Aveda. You leave the items here, if you leave the fruits here, they're going to go to waste. They're going to be worthless. Over here, if you sell them, you're going to monetize the fruit and you'll save a bunch of money. You're going to, as if found money for him. So why not sell them in Beit Din? So Amar Le Abaye, V'lav Itmar Allah. Abaye says, didn't we have a qualification of this Mishnah that Amar Rabbi Barchan, Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Shanu, Ela B'Kdei Chesronan? That's only if the deterioration is the normal rate of deterioration of Yoter Mikdei Chesronan, Mokran B'Beit Din. But if it's greater than the normal deterioration rate, then he sells in Beit Din. Roshkein Halcha, Dab Sidei L'Gamrei. Certainly over here, everybody would agree that you would sell them because you're going to lose them totally. In that case, the fruit are just accelerated in their depreciation or their deterioration. Over here, chametz is going to go to zero. As soon as you hit the Zman Yisro chametz, it's going to be worthless completely. So that's like the fastest decline here you can see. And certainly over here, you should sell it even according to Kulei Alma. So that's what Rashi explains. What is Kedei Chesronan? Shein Nechsarim L'Kederach Yisaron Shel Peirot. That is if they deteriorate at the normal rate of deterioration of fruit. So if they're deteriorating at the normal rate, then he's not losing anything. He put the fruit there for safekeeping. He has that expectation that over the duration of time that he left with you, a certain amount of the fruits will deteriorate. That is a natural occurrence. That is an expected occurrence. And since that's the expected case, you don't engage with it. On the other hand, if it's an accelerated deterioration, that's not what he expected. And therefore, then if you intervene at that point, you're helping him out. You're saving him the loss of money. So the way Rashi explains it is that Kedei Chesronan is if it's the normal rate of deterioration, then according to the Tana Kama, you don't touch them. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, you sell them in Beit Din. But if they're an accelerated deterioration, then everybody agrees that you would sell them in Beit Din. The problem with Rashi's interpretation is then, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, why would you sell them? If they're only deteriorating at the normal rate, why would Rabbi Shimon Gamliel ever suggest that you should go in there and sell them? This is an expected occurrence. There's nothing out of the ordinary. So why would you sell them? So therefore, Tosafot gives a different explanation. The amounts that the Gemara and Beit Metzia gives you is the yearly deterioration rate for fruits. So then you would subdivide it and say, well, if that's the yearly deterioration, then this is what we should expect on a monthly basis. So over here, what ended up happening is in the first month or second month or third month, whatever month it is, the deterioration was faster than it should have been expected for that period of time. Yet, you still have not reached the threshold of how much it would deteriorate over a year. So therefore, it's still called Bichdei Chesronan within the normal frame of deterioration because you haven't reached that yearly threshold set by Chazal. When you're looking at this, the Tanakam says, don't touch it because you haven't hit that yearly threshold. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes along and says, wait a minute, it's deteriorating at a rate that's faster than we would have expected for a monthly rate. Go ahead and sell it. Now, Yoter Mikdei Chesronan is once you crossed over the threshold that Chazal gave for the yearly deterioration. Once you crossed over that, whether it's less than a year or it takes the whole year to do that, but if you crossed over that, that's the type of excess deterioration, then even the Tanakhama in that case would agree that you can sell it in order to preserve it. Okay, now the Gemara continues. Tana Tani Kameid Rabbi Yehuda Agav Ha'itzdeba. It's he explained this Mishnah, and then he says that they placed it agav ha'itzdeba. Now, itzdeba can be translated in one of two ways. Itzdeba can either be a bench or a portico. Now, the Gemara's assumption agav ha'itzdeba means that it was placed on top of this bench, but it seems to be it's an area that's low down on Har HaBayit. And what would be the purpose of placing these two chalot todah there? They're supposed to be a siman for the am. Why would you put them agav, like literally on top of the bench? So was he trying to hide them? So today, the right way to read it in the Mishnah is agag ha'itzdeba, on the roof of the bench or on the roof of the portico that was there. But something that was high up where it was visible to the people in the city. Amar Rachba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Harabayit stav kaful haya. Harabayit was a double colonnade. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a similar support in a Baraita. Harabayit Stav Kofulaya was a double colonnade. Yehuda Omer Istivanit Haitani Kret. It's called, the term for the double colonnade is an Istivanit. Stav Lifnim Istav. Now this double colonnade is one inside of the other. And generally the reason for this is that you would have these colonnades that held up platforms on top of them. So those platforms that are on top of them, first of all, people could stand on top of them or sit on top of them and view things that were going on in Har HaBayit. Number two is it allowed for shade or covering while still allowing the light to come in. So that's why you would have these just roofs or on these colonnades without the walls around them. That's why there are these porticos. The other thing is that if you look, there are some pictures, and you can see these in the models of the Beit HaMikdash, that the two rows were that the first row was lower. It was a lower set of colonnades with a platform on top of it. And the second row was a higher colonnades with a platform above it. So that way, it was almost like a tiered bleacher where you have, you know, the first level and then the second level. That's for the people sitting on top. And in terms of light as well, that the lower colonnades got their light, but then the people in the back had higher colonnades and the light was able to go into those rooms in the back as well. So for that reason, it was set up in this manner. So what they meant in the Mishnah, put a gaga yitzhaba all the way on top of this, the roof of the colonnades, where it's visible to the people in the city, and that's why it serves as a siman. Now we said that what he utilizes to make the siman are chalot, todah, psulot. Mar says, am I psulot? Why are you using pasul chalot of korban todah, or where are you getting them from? So amar Rabbi Chanina, mitok shayu merubot nipsalot belina. Because there were so many of them, they ended up having a problem of lina. They were left over. And because there were so many and they were left over, that's why we have all of these psulot chalot todah. The Tanya, because everybody, emivien todah b'chag hamatzot mipnei chametz shabbat. You can't bring a korban todah on Pesach because one of the requirements with the korban todah is to bring 40 chalot, 30 of which are matzah, 10 of which are chametz. So those chametz are precluded from being brought in the mikdash on Pesach because there's an isur chametz on Pesach. So you cannot bring a korban todah on Pesach. I says, Shita, of course. Why would you think you could bring the chametz on Pesach? It's an Isur chametz on Pesach, so there's no reason to believe that you should be able to bring the korban todah on Pesach. So I'm Rav Darba Ava, Hacha B'Yud Gdalit Askin. We're talking about Erev Pesach. You cannot bring the korban todah on Erev Pesach, even though there's a period of time in which you could eat chametz. So if you brought your korban todah in the morning, it should be just fine. Why can't you bring it? Because Zavar, we hold, not like Rabbi Shimon, but like the Rabbanan argue on him, that Emivin Kodashim, the Beit Psul, you're not allowed to accelerate the problem times for Kodashim or the invalid times for Kodashim. Kodashim or a Todah can be eaten for one day and one night. If you bring your Korban Todah on Erev Pesach, you can only eat your Korban Todah or the Chalot of the Korban Todah for a very short duration until the Zman Yisur Chametz. So even if you think it's like Truma, you can eat it all the way until the sixth hour. Still, from the sixth hour and on that day, plus the subsequent night, which is already Pesach full-fledged, you can eat the chalot of the korban todah, and you've now shortened the normal duration of such a korban or valid time to eat the korban. And that you're not allowed to do, because you're accelerating the psul. So therefore, you cannot bring a korban todah, not only on Pesach, but you cannot bring a korban todah on Erev HaPesach. That is why we don't say Mizmor LeTodah on Erev Pesach, and why we don't say Mizmor LeTodah throughout the duration of Pesach, because you couldn't bring a Korban Todah during those periods of time. V'kuli Alma b'shlosha asar maiti luhu. Everybody agrees that you have to bring a Korban Todah. If you want to bring it, you have to bring it on the 13th. U'mitok shem mirubot nifsalot b'lina. And because there were so many of them, they ended up with a problem of lina. Why were there so many of them? Well, basically, everybody's coming up to the regel, and they want to give their korban todah, but they're not going to be able to bring it on Erev Pesach. They're not going to be able to bring it for the duration of Pesach. Their only chance when they get up there to bring their korban todah basically is on the 13th. So the Kohanim were inundated with these korbanot todah on the 13th. And because of that, they ended up with lina, that which is left over. Lina, which is something that requires sreifa, or it's required to be burnt. And because it's lina, it's required to be burnt. That's why we're utilizing these chalot as our siman. Mishum Rabbi Yana Omer Ksherot Tayu. Rabbi Yana says, no. Who says that they were korbanot todah, that were psulot? They were ksherot. Amai korelu psulot. So then why does our Mishnah say that they were psulot, these chalot? Shlo nishchat alein hazevach. They never had the korban be shechted for them. So you have a case here when you bring a korban todah. Along with the korban todah comes these lachmaniyot. That's lechem and matzah, all the 40 loaves that come with it. The 40 loaves have what we call kedushat tamim. You can designate them to be for the korban, and they are done so through the money or the purchase that you make that is donated to Hekdesh in order to pay for them, or the money that you paid for them, and then you relegate them to be for kodashim. So that's how they attain what's called kedushat tamim. But in order to attain kedushat haguf, where they become part and parcel of the process of Kodeshim and the Mikdash, whereby they have a din in Lina, they have a din in Pigol, all of these things. The only way that happens is once you shech the Zevach, when you shech the Korban with which these Chalot come. When you shech the Korban with which these Chalot come, that is Mikadesh the Chalot. Since they are, in a certain way, subsidiary to the Korban, they are subject to the Kedushat HaKorban. So when you bring the Korban and you shech the Korban, that's what imbues Kedusha in the Chalot. So over here, they're called Psulot because you never brought the Korban Todah that was supposed to be brought along with these Chalot. It says Vinishchot. So go ahead, shech the Korban. What are you waiting for? We can make them Kadosh. We can make them fine. It says Sh'avad HaZevach. They lost this Korban. They had a Korban that was designated, and they lost that Korban, and now they have nothing to shech in order to be Mekadesh the Chalot. It says V'naiti Zevach Acher. No problem. Where's its replacement? Bring in a replacement. Bring in a substitute for it, and that'll be Mekadesh the Chalot. V'nishchot, and we'll do the Shechita, and everything will be fine. Tamar zo todah v'zo lachma uke derabo. Because it's a case where he said, this is the todah, this is its bread, and like Rabba, Damar Rabba, avad alechem mevi lechem acher. If you lose the bread that was associated with a korban todah, you can replace the lechem, bring in new lechem. Avda todah, if you lose the todah itself, ein mevi todah acheret. You can't replace that korban todah. My taima. What's the reasoning behind that? Very simple logic. Lechem glau todah. Lechem is secondary, subsidiary to the korban todah. The ikar thing that you're bringing here is the korban todah. The lechem is just an accompaniment to it. So therefore, if the lechem disappears, we can replace it because the main item is still there, which is the korban todah. Vein todah la lechem. But the other way around is not true. If you have the lechem in place and then the korban disappears, then you can't all of a sudden bring in just out. Here, let me fill in. I'll bring in another korban. The korban is the central part of what you bring here. You can't just have the lechem hang out and then you bring in a new korban. That doesn't work that way. It says, Ven nifrikinu, venafkinu lechulin. Let us redeem them and allow it to go out to Chulin. Why are we leaving this lechem in this limbo state where it is psulot? But it doesn't really mean psulot. It just means that they never shechted the korban to imbue in it kedushat aguf for kodashim. But it still has kedushat tamim. But kedushat tamim we can exchange onto money. We can purchase the chalot, have the kedushah go onto the money. With that money, you can go buy a korban todah or lechem for a korban todah as necessary. Now, Tosafot points out over here that he doesn't think Rashi is right, that you can use the money that you redeem the Lachmei Todah with to purchase another Korban Todah. Because he says that if you can't bring another Zevach to be Mekadesh them, then certainly you can't take the money that was exchanged with their Kedusha and go buy a Zevach with it. And therefore, Tosafot says the exchange or the pigeon that's done here is simply to remove the Kedusha from the Lechem so it doesn't go to waste. Whatever you are Podeh, that Kedusha gets basically thrown out. So you do with the minimum amount of money, but it's not a kedusha that transfers, and then you use it to purchase other kodashim with.
So Gemara says, okay, elol olam shenishchat alenei zevach. Okay, we're backing away from that. That didn't work so well. So it's a case here where they did shech the korban that was mekadesh the lechem. V'nishpach adam. But what went wrong was that they spilled the blood. They were going to bring the blood to put on the mizbeach. They spilled the blood, and that's why it's not a kosher korban anymore. Ukeman, who's this like a rabbi? Dam rabbi shnei dvarim amatirim malin ze below ze. Two items that are both a matir.
Two objects that help to be mekadesh an item. So for instance, over here, we have a korban that has both shechita and zrikat adam. And the korban serves to be mekadesh alechem. If you do one of those two, you end up with a partial kedusha. It's not all or nothing, but rather you get a partial kedusha. If you do one and not the other, for instance here, shechita without the zrika, you'll end up with a certain level of kedusha.
Titania, we have a braita. Kivsei Atzeret, when it comes to the shlamim that are brought on Shavuot, shlamim that are brought on Shavuot have two lechem, shtei lechem that are brought with them. So, Kivsei Atzeret, ein mekadshim lechem elab shchita. They only give kedusha or rebuke kedusha on the lechem once you shecht the kvasim. Ketzad, how does that work? Shechtan lishman, mizarak daman lishman. If you shecht them with the proper intent, and you're zorek, you put the dam on the mizbeach with the proper intent, then kidesh alechem. Then you're successful at being Mekadesh, sanctifying the Lechem, and elevating it to have the Kedushat HaGuf. Shachtan Shalodishman. And then if you do it, Shalodishman, Zakar Daman Shalodishman, or you did Zrikat Adam Shalodishman, or it could be here that was done Lishma, it doesn't matter anymore because the Shechita was done Lodishma. Lo Kidesh HaLechem. In this case, the Lechem doesn't get imbued with the Kedushat HaGuf because the Shechita was done improperly. Shechita was done Shalodishman.
So even though we have a principle by Kodashim that when you bring a korban shelo lishma, it's still kasher, but it doesn't satisfy the obligation you have to bring that korban. It's still a kosher korban. And as Tosafot points out over here, yes, it's a kosher korban, but a kosher korban is a korban nidava, and it doesn't have the strength or the normal power of the korban to be mikadesh to lechem. And because of that, the korban will be mutar to eat, but it will not affect the lechem or give the lechem the kedusha that is necessary.
Shachtan lishman, vizarak daman shalo lishman, if he does a shkita lishma, he does a zrika da dam shalo lishman, lechem kadosh v'eno kadosh. Then the lechem is in this limbo state. It has a certain amount of kedusha, but it does not have full-fledged kedusha. It has a certain amount of kedusha because the shkita took place. On the other hand, it doesn't have full-fledged kedusha because he didn't have the zrika da dam be done properly. Divrei Rabbi. That's the position of Rabbi. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Lolam, Eno Kadosh, Halechem, Achishchot, Lishman, Vizrok, Daman, Lishman. Rabbi Shimon says it's only Kadosh when you do everything right. It's only Kadosh when you do the Shechita, Lishma, and you do the Zrika, Lishma. So in that case, he says,
well, since all you did over here was Shechita and no Zrika, it's an all or nothing deal. And therefore, there is no Kindusha that's imbued in this Lechem.
So here's a case where after Shechita, the dam was spilled. So since the dam was spilled after Shechita, Rabbi believes that Shechita by itself is enough to bring the lechem into a certain level of Kedusha. So if that's the case, now you can have lechem that is pasul afterwards because it attained that Kedusha.
So now that you have Shechita without Zrika, the lechem now has a certain amount of Kedusha. That's Kedusha Damim, not Kedusha Aguf. As Tosafot points out, this can't be regular Kedusha Damim because then we're back to step one, which means you could have redeemed the lechem. And so that can't be the level. The Gemara Menachot tells us that it reaches a certain level of Kedusha, but not a high enough level of Kedusha that you can actually redeem it. So it's in this no man's land of Kedusha where it has Kedusha, but not enough Kedusha that you can redeem it, but enough Kedusha now that it's in a problematic state. And that problematic state is that Nishbach Adam, the Dam was spilled, and therefore you can't do Zrikat Adam to finalize or bring it up to the proper level of Kedusha and to be matirit for the Kohanim to eat. On the other hand, you can't redeem it. So now what's going to happen is you have a double problem. What's going to happen now is even worse than what we spoke about before. Before we said it was a Korban Pasul. Mara says, okay, maybe not. We'll go over to look at it as a Korban Kasher. We couldn't find a way to explain it as a Korban Kasher. We came back to being a Korban Pasul over here, but the Psul here actually ends up being a double Psul. One Psul is that the Dam spilled. So therefore, the lechem only reaches a certain level of kedusha. But on top of that, now we're going to leave it overnight. And now you're going to have psulina. So it's not only going to be a problem because of the dam being spilled, but you also have psulina. And those are the lechem that we are using over here. Tosafot does mention the fact that there is a likelihood of spilling the dam in these cases because there's so many korbanei todah that are brought on the 13th that they're in a rush to do it. And so there is a high likelihood of having these korbanei lechemei todah psulot because of that situation. And that's what they relied on to use that as the siman.
Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Shechita by itself does nothing for the lechem. You need a proper Shechita and a proper Zrika in order to be Mekadesh the lechem. Rabbi says, now, afilu teimer Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, hacha b'may askinan. What's the case over here? What's going over here? Gagon shenitkabel adam b'kos v'nishbach. He was mekabel adam in a cup, and then it fell or it spilled. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, savalei ka'abuah, and he holds like his father in this case, damar kolom meid zrok zerok dami. Anything that is as if you're ready to, and everything's right there, the only thing you have to do is actually do the action, then it's as if you've done the action. Or we look at it as if you've done the action. So since you already did Kabbalat Adam, and you're ready to do Zrikat Adam, even though the Adam spilled, we look at it as if it was done, or as if the Zrikah was done in this case. And therefore, it would be Mekadesh the Lechem, even according to Rabbi Elazar by Rabbi Shimon. Because even though you didn't do the Zrikah yet, the Shechita is done, and you have Kabbalat Adam, that Kabbalat Adam is Ki'ilu Zaruk, because once you get to the point where all you're missing is doing the Zrika, it's as if you have done the Zrika. Tosafot points out over here that we only invoke this principle, the Chumrah, not the Kula. We don't say, oh, well, it was as if it was spread on the Mizbeach, therefore then you can eat the Lechem. No. It means that it was as if on the Mizbeach, therefore we elevate the Lechem to have Kedushat Aguf, which is detrimental to it in terms of Tuma, the inability to redeem it, all sorts of other items. Tana, Mishum Rav Elazar Amruk, Sherotayu. In the name of Rav Elazar, they said that these loaves were actually Kasher.
If they're ksherot, then why are we keeping them over to the next day, or why are they available? So Tosafot says it's like truma that gets left over. It's just something where the volume of the item ended up having, by some chance, there was leftovers that came into that time period, and that's why we have them. but not because they were psulim or there was some inherent psul in them.
As long as they were left there, both of them, everybody eats. One of them is taken tolin. Then we're in that limbo state. You can't eat, but you don't burn the chametz yet. Once you've taken both of them off, everybody went into burn mode. Everybody then started to eliminate the chametz. Tanya, Abba Shaul Omer, Shtei Parot Ayu Choshot Behar Mishcha. They had two oxen that were plowing on Har HaZeitim. Kozma Shishteim Choshot. As long as both of them are there, Kolam Ochlim, everybody eats. Nitela Etachat Mehem. If they took one of them back home, then Tolin, Lo Ochlim, Lo Sofim. You're not allowed to eat anymore. You don't burn it yet. You haven't reached the Zman HaYisr yet. Tidlu Shtehen, if both of the Parot are gone, then Etkulu Kolam Sofim. Then they all begin to burn the chametz. So the only question here is, what was the siman? What was the sign that was used to demarcate, based on Beit Din, these different thresholds? So one says it's just it was done by the Chalot Todah, that's in our Mishnah. And over here we have Abba Shaul suggesting it was done through these parot that were plowing up on Har HaZeitim. Okay, we'll stop here.